Welcome again to another episode of Sacktown Talks. Today we have a special guest for you today. We have Chris Holden joining us. Chris, how's it going? Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me. Always a pleasure to join you.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. This is, you know, being from Pasadena all your life. How was it this year dealing with kind of the pandemic? No Rose Bowl, no Rose Parade. You know, what's going on in Pasadena these days?
Well, that was a big part of it, you know, to grow up in this town and for 60 years of my life to always, even though the early years, I don't remember all that much, but to have an uninterrupted New Year's Eve and also January 1st by not having the parade was a shock to everyone's system. And when you're going through the month of November and December and you see the grandstands going up, it's just sort of a, you know, it's just an inescribable type of feeling that you have, that you know the whole world is going to be watching your hometown, and not just with the parade but the game. It was a real shock, not only to the tradition of what we're used to, but also the economy of our community and the region. It, you know, that the football game, the parade is usually a loss leader, right, but the game brings in about $300 million to the larger community. So we missed that. But just in terms of having our legislative session altered so dramatically, where I was spending, like all the other members, spending a lot of time in the district, but not able to be in person, but trying to be the conduit to information on how cities in the early months would respond to stay-at-home orders and how the public was supposed to respond to the governor's directives, and you know, also looking at it from the standpoint of, you know, just in terms of businesses that were impacted, restaurants, of course, city governments trying to find out how they could, what role they could play, looking for the governor to look at certain changes to allow for facilitation of ideas and implementation of policy. So it was really a lot of that until now, where we are sort of finding a way now to get back to, with the new order of restaurants opening, businesses sort of getting back to some level of economic viability, and now getting the vaccine distributed throughout the communities and into the arms of our constituents. That's kind of our job one at the moment.
Yeah, I think it's something, you know, new I've learned here is that, you know, I guess there's 58 counties, but there's even more health districts. And correct me if I'm wrong, I believe Pasadena has its own kind of health officer. Is that correct?
It has. It's one of three municipalities, cities within the state of California that has its own health department. And, you know, so as such, like Long Beach, you can kind of go out and sort of look at what's working for your community. I think Pasadena was one of the, at the end of last year, one of the last cities to shut down outdoor dining. Clearly LA County took a more aggressive position on that. Pasadena was trying to figure out a way to open up and keep the businesses opened up, right, but it's kind of hard to do that when you're the outlier. But no, it's been a challenge to be sure.
So I, you know, I guess how's the vaccine rollout going in Pasadena, kind of with a kind of a smaller, I guess, community? Are you guys able to be more efficient?
I think that we have the ability to be efficient. I think the real challenge now is to make sure that we have adequate supply to meet the demand. My understanding is the city is prepared to look at the Rose Bowl as a larger venue for the broader community to come in and utilize. I think that we have a pretty good understanding of how best to deploy in the communities that are in most need, those who are on the front line and are most susceptible to catching the virus, but also who might be transportation dependent, public transportation dependent, I should say. And so we can utilize community centers, schools, and local churches to sort of help make it easier for folks to walk to from their community. So I think that once we have the supply in place to meet the demand, I think we're going to be very efficient in getting it dispersed to the community.
You know, I guess this Sunday we all had a surprise when, you know, the governor lifted these stay-at-home orders and kind of let businesses open again. You know, we're all kind of thinking it's downhill from here. But I guess a lot of members, I guess, expressed concern that, you know, they found out, you know, on social media, kind of like everyone else. Kind of, I guess, how are you working, you know, keeping informed and, you know, working with your constituents, making sure that they know, I guess, the latest information?
Well, we try to be very responsive to the direction that the governor is putting out through executive order or recognizing the need to move and shift in policy approaches. And I think one of the important parts is that we're a very important conduit to getting that information out. So it's critical that we have the most up-to-date information that we are putting out. We have our own channels of how we distribute information and communicate, and we don't want to find ourselves in a position where obviously we're putting out yesterday's news as now being old and stale, given new directives that we didn't really necessarily get connected with in a timely way, so we could put it out there real time that lines up with the governor's efforts. And I think we want we're trusting he and the health officials to navigate and to lay out good policy. But you know, the legislature is certainly flexing its area of responsibility, its muscle, if you will, to say that we're part of this process of policy making and decision making, and we want to make sure that we continue to be able to be helpful to the overall objectives of the state, and to support the governor, and also for the governor to value the information that the legislature has to offer to help address some of the on the ground issues that we might be detecting might be helpful to the overall game plan.
You know, I guess kind of was interesting this year, you know, your first day you're swearing in was at the Golden One Center. You know, they spaced everyone out. Is it kind of, I guess, a little bit back to normal now? Are you guys, you know, all eight of you back on the assembly floor and meeting in committee again? Or is it still kind of distance out and more people staying at home?
Well, right now we're just in that part of the beginning of session where our floor activities are fairly light. We either have ceremonial or we have adjourned memories that we're participating in. We did take some action to start moving along some of the budget items that are very critical to our efforts of addressing COVID. We had a timeline issue as it related to the SB 91 and ensuring that tenants had a safety net, that when that expired, the moratorium was continued. So those are the kind of things that we've been able to do. Committees haven't yet started to meet just yet. We have committees maybe meeting to deal with informational hearings. But right now, when we do get together and we're meeting on the floor, we're meeting as we're able to spread out. We take up the entire front and back part of the chamber. But no, we're able to at least come together, work the full week. And I think that's been good. I think everybody appreciates. Now we're not able to bring back our full staff just yet. And so that's kind of one of the challenges that we're continuing to work through. But generally speaking, I think we're positioned that when the committee start meeting and when we start processing bills on the floor, we should have worked out, even under the challenges of COVID, the ability to function more effectively than we were last year when it just sort of happened and we weren't sure exactly, you know, how to manage in that moment, the crisis. We needed to start changing our ways of doing things. So, but yeah, I think this year, I think we at least have a better rhythm to how we can take care of the people's business.
You know, kind of, you just brought up the budget. You know, the governor introduced his budget a few weeks ago. You know, last year, a lot of people's budget priorities were cut short with kind of the COVID issues and the budget kind of being cut in half. Kind of what, you know, this year, allegedly there's more money there for everyone in the state. Kind of what are some of your priorities in this year's budget?
You know, they align with what the times call for, obviously, to make sure that we're getting money in the budget to address the vaccine issues and getting those deployed, making sure we're looking at the ways that we can start to plan for opening up the economy more in a more fuller and robust way. And then, of course, getting schools open again, I think, are three of the top areas of priority that sort of line in. That are more universal. Obviously, we've been very interested in wanting to make sure that We were seeing the budget continue to find ways of expanding infrastructure development in communities, ones things that will also create jobs, enhance mobility, address affordable housing issues. And so where it ties in, where we can come up with policies and budget appropriations that can sort of address those kind of issues, that's where we continue to focus. We have a project, obviously, here in the San Gabriel Valley about extending the Gold Line rail, light rail transportation project from Pomona to the San Bernardino lines in Montclair, with the hope at some point of seeing it connect to the Ontario Airport. So those are the kind of things from a budgetary standpoint that we're very excited about and trying to create some energy around.
You know, 2020 was such an eventful year, so many things happening, fires, rolling blackouts. It seems like we've forgotten them recently, but, you know, up here in the North, you know, we've had a bunch of power issues. Kind of, right. you know, your work in the utilities and energy sector, kind of what are the things you guys are looking at this year to tackle?
Well, I think one of the things that we want to make sure is that as we continue to deal with sort of the fact that we're dealing, quite frankly, with 24/7 around the clock, if you will, fire season, it doesn't just sort of land in one particular part of the calendar. It is throughout the year. Now, in varying degrees, it has its impact. Certainly the summer months, we have to obviously be very vigilant and make sure that, one, we have adequate resources on the ground, that we're making sure that the utilities are doing well to implement their wildfire mitigation plans, and that they're doing what they need to do to clear brush around their infrastructure and secure power lines and the like. But we're also very mindful of the fact that as we go through this process of dealing with these catastrophic wildfires and wind events that have the potential to have hurricane force impact through the canyons and our foothills, that poses a major impact in terms of our liability to the extent that the power lines are blown down, poles are ripped up, and can ignite a fire. And so having these public safety, public shutoff part of the new language, if you will, of the utility world, and also of the communities, how we continue to look at ensuring that the utilities are doing this in a responsible way, and that they're a little bit more strategic in how they do it, so that they're not shutting power off for large swaths of community when the real issue is in a more narrow locale. So getting that, helping them sort of work through the rhythm of that, making sure that we are integrating new technologies, microgrids and other things to sort of help when power is shut off, evacuation procedures to sort of make sure baseline support is in place for families that are evacuated. So those are the kind of things that we're paying attention to and trying to make sure that the Public Utility Commission is instituting strategies and plans that are aggressive, because as we dial back to a year ago, last fall, and those wildfires and that impacted, and the public shutoffs that went off, and the devastation that created in the PG&E territory, but also in Southern California Edison territory as well, when businesses were shut down and they lost so much in their product, and people were outside of their home for extended periods of time. You know, those are times that we don't want to see happen. We want to see that reduce. And I think this past year, the PUC did a much better job with the utilities in terms of making sure that we were in a better position not to have the same kind of adverse impact on the community that we saw the year prior.
You know,
that's one aspect of what we're doing.
You got so much going on with, you know, COVID, the budget, you know, your committee responsibility as a chairman, but, you know, what personal legislation are you looking to carry this year kind of outside of those areas?
Well, you know, last year we had a really important bill kind of coming out of the conversations after the George Floyd murder that expanded beyond the conversations nationally, beyond just the the impact of the pandemic. Matter of fact, it knocked the pandemic out of the headlines for at least a week or so as we were trying to process what happened in Minnesota. And then, of course, out of that became the conversation around systemic racism, excessive use of force by police officers in certain circumstances. And so we looked at that as a moment to maybe step into the space and try to figure out how we can be able to look at California and where we fit into this conversation. And as we talked about law enforcement and reforms that needed to take place and what happened in Minnesota, where the officers basically watched another officer with his knee on a civilian citizen strangle him to death by virtue of leaving it there for an extended eight minutes, and why those officers did not intervene. And even though Minnesota had a duty to intervene law, as California did, there wasn't any clear guidelines on what constitutes intervention. So our bill was designed, 1022, was designed to lay out clear guidelines on when an officer should intervene, under what circumstances, what techniques should be used, and in the event that they do not, and they should have, what those penalties for not intervening would amount to, which would be either way from a fine and suspension to disqualification to be an officer. And so we thought that those were prudent, didn't take away any of the officer's Bill of Rights and due process, but it died in appropriations in the Senate. We'll come back with it again this year because we think it's a righteous step and something. It's not creating the law. It's just saying, here's what you do when you find yourself in a situation where intervention is necessary. The other was looking at corporate boardrooms and creating diversity in the corporate boardroom. When you look at the diversity in the state of California, where the population is 60% minority, it is a majority minority state. The state of the United States will be there by 2045, 2050. And so how do we manage diversity? How do we start to have corporations that are publicly traded corporations in California reflect at the very top the diversity, which is California? And the numbers do not show that diversity. And so we thought it was important to take the opportunity where the conversation was so ripe to really get into this and try to find a way to sort of bring some clarity to how we might be able to move forward and be more proactive to how equity and diversity is addressed. So we introduced a bill 979, which became law this year. And as such, that sets a goal. Well, actually, it mandates that each corporation in California by the end of this year will have at least one person of an underrepresented group appointed to their board of directors. It's administered. The program is administered by the Secretary of State. There are penalties in the event that corporations do not comply. Year two, depending on the size of your board, it would go to two members that would be added to the board. So I think that there's efforts along those ways. But the good news about that is that we had really, I think, wonderful support from the Silicon Valley Leadership Group. When we started this conversation back in 2017, we did not have a lot of support from some of the business groups and some of the high-tech companies in California, Silicon Valley. And I think now there seems to be a greater willingness to participate and try to engage their member companies. I will also say that as a result of this bill, we were contacted by NASDAQ, who was trying to have the Security Exchange Commission approve new guidelines to allow them basically to implement the very elements of AB 979. And you're talking about 3,000 member corporations that are on their exchange. So we see this as not just California, but it's the first in the nation type of bill that, like so many, was born out of California and is sending ripples across the country that hopefully will take a moment, but not too long, to create real change and see diversity appreciated and recognized. Because the studies show the more diversity you have, the better to the bottom line. And so we're excited about what that bill represents. And those are the kinds of things. We have a companion type of bill this year that will look inwardly at civil service and how within the state of California, civil servants who are on the lower end of the pay range, it's very diverse. On the upper end, if you're jobs that are six figures, it's not diverse at all. That those are not going to reflect people of color like they should, women to a lesser degree, but people of color. So we're looking at that bill, addressing that issue, and creating some new standards and practices that will create greater opportunity for advancement of all people who happen to work within the civil service sector. So those are the kind of things. We got a bunch of bills that deal with education as well as environmental issues. And I think we're really excited about what the package is turning out to be for this year.
Is that AB 105? Is that the Upward Mobility Act? Is that the one looking at the civil service?
That's correct. Okay. AB 105, Upward Mobility. And it actually, we were putting the bill forward. And as we were working on the language of the bill, I think the Sacramento Bee covered a story on CARB, where there are a number of African-American employees who were really upset that they were being passed over for promotional opportunities, even getting the opportunity to compete. And they were raising those concerns. And those are the types of things this bill was designed to address. And so we've been working with leadership within the staffing level, who has been very helpful in terms of identifying some additional areas that this bill might want to cover. And so it looks like it's going to be even more comprehensive than it was originally intended, but it is about addressing the issue of upward mobility.
Interesting. You know, I know you do a lot of work also with the Legislative Black Caucus. Kind of what are the things some of you guys are working on now, and, you know, looking forward to Black History Month, kind of what kind of are your plans moving into next month?
Well, you know, just this week, it's kind of an interesting way to kick off Black History Month. We saw our colleague, Dr. Shirley Weber, confirmed by not only the Assembly, but the Senate for Secretary of State. And to have someone who has been just really a pillar on social justice issues and criminal justice reform, and to really take on important issues of the day. And sometimes those are not the easy ones to take on because there's a lot of pushback. You're looking to create change where some do not feel change is necessary, but you can roll that scenario back 30 or 40 years. And that was certainly the argument that people made at that time for change on civil rights. So I think just seeing her elevate is exciting. She becomes the first African-American woman to serve as Secretary of State. Today is really her swearing in day. So that's an exciting accomplishment just to kick it off and just send a nice message out there. But the caucus, I think, has continued to be very focused on making sure that where contracting is being done through the state, that there's a great outreach to make sure ethnic minority small business owners are able to participate, whether through SB1 funding for public roads and highway projects and infrastructure along those lines. And this year we're going to pick that up because I don't think that the state has done a great job in making sure that small businesses are been included in that process. And considering taxpayer dollars are being used for these projects, there needs to be a greater effort to try to ensure that their outreach is being done. We're always going to be looking at and have what I think is an appropriate and thoughtful agenda around justice system and how police reform and issues along those lines. I think we may have two or three bills, including the one I described, that I would be carrying that will be part of the caucus's centerpiece. And then I think it's just really trying to make sure that we are also doing things outside the legislative realm, but also making sure that as we look at our deployment of resources to address COVID-19, that we are looking at the communities most impacted in African-American community, as well as the Latino community, are sort of where we see this virus having the greatest impact disproportionately. And so being able to also have a bully pulpit to be able to continue to draw attention to issues that impact on people of color And actually, quite frankly, the Legislative Black Caucus's issues are designed to build up all people. You know, it is we're only strong as our weakest link. And if we ignore the marginalized, then how good and how strong and how viable can we be as a state if we're ignoring the talent, ignoring the need, and ignoring the opportunities that need to be created for these people and to be able, and these communities to be able to grow and foster and to impact as they know they can and will and have already done. So, you know, I think that we're going to continue to have that social justice voice. It's the legacy of the caucus ever since Mervyn Dimely and, you know, and Speaker Brown, Willie Brown and others, even my dad, when he was one of the early members of the Black Caucus, Yvonne Brathwaite-Burt, Autumn's mom, my dad, Nate. So there's a legacy there that we think is important to keep carrying that torch, and we're going to step into it. And we'll do our celebrations, recognizing our unsung heroes, the people whose names no one will know, but who carried the torch, were willing to stand up and make change in their communities when change needed to happen. And so we've historically recognized what we call the unsung heroes during the month of February. And so we'll continue in that as well.
Yeah. This week was, I guess, the 1 year anniversary of Kobe Bryant's passing. And I believe you have a furry friend that you paid tribute to Kobe. Is that correct?
Well, it's interesting. Yeah, you're talking about Kobe. Yeah, I'm our Aussie Doodle. First of all, he's got incredible nonstop energy. He's a Australian Shepherd, standard poodle mix, and he is a herder. So he's always pushing at our feet and kind of keeping us going. And you know, he's got more energy than I desire in a dog. But anyway, that's my wife's idea there. I think what we were trying to find a name for him, you know, you're trying to find something that, because our previous dog was a Saint Bernard, so completely different personalities. But yeah, he keeps us on our toes, and we didn't really think about it at the time because we actually named him before Kobe's. We got him, and then we named him before Kobe Bryant's passing, right. And so it just sort of happened that way. But he's fun. It's always nice to have a pet that, you know, can take your mind off of the issues of the day.
Right, right. And how are you enjoying the Lakers season so far? You think they're going to have a repeat? And can anybody stop?
You know, them? I think they have certainly the talent and the ability to do that. I think some other teams have gotten they've improved as well. The last two games have not been so good. Actually, the last three of the last four have not been all that great. So I don't know if they're just sort of tired, because you have to factor into the fact that they had a very long season because they went all the way last year and then a short turnaround before they start the new season. So I don't know if what we're seeing is a little fatigue kick in, but they certainly have the talent, the drive, the determination. And, you know, for all of us LA fans, you know, it goes back to when I was a kid and started following them in 1972 with Wilt Chamberlain and Jerry West and those folks, that legacy continues on for a great franchise. So yeah, we're blessed in that respect. I mean, you guys had the Golden State Warriors for, you know, and they're still kind of claw their way back into it. So we keep our eye on they have the potential. They get Klay Thompson back. They're going to start moving up as well. So we're blessed to have good teams here in California.
Yeah. Well, here's the hope that maybe we'll be able to see them in person sometime this year.
You know, I surprised my wife with it. That was her Christmas gift, was to go to the game. What was that, December 2019, when they played the Clippers.
Right.
The outcome of that, not so great. But, you know, and who knew that was going to be the last in-person game. Well, I don't know if it was the last in-person, but it was the last one we were able to go to before the pandemic. So, yeah, we're looking forward to game time happening again.
Oh, crazy. Well, thank you so much for taking the time, Chris. It was a pleasure talking with you, and have a great weekend. We look forward to talking to you again. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, Chris. Okay. Thanks. Our cold dreamers. Wow.